motion to approve the minutes from September 19th?
I'll second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Oh, wait, actually, I apologize, Mr. Chair. There was one small correction. And do you have a hard copy of the minutes?
Yes,
right
sir.
There. How was it? Damn it, I should have called you earlier. All right, for right now, considering I don't remember it, it wasn't anything major, but it was like one of those weird typo things. Yeah. But I'll call you afterwards. All right.
You wrote her name.
Okay, we're good.
Did I?
No.
At least she spelled my last name correctly, which is not always the case, by the way, even to this day.
Right, Mr. Chair. C-R-N-A.
No, actually, for one, for some reason, they spell it with an S, and I have no idea why. But anyway. All right. I'm good, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Move on. Thank you. Hector, please make a note of that to Jay when you get a chance.
Yes.
We're going to go to 291, setting a public hearing on proposed local law number 9 regarding campaign finance reform to be held on November 15th.
I'll move it. Second.
Thank you. Follow question.
Go ahead. Just, I did email off to, well, to my caucus, as well as to council, the comments of B. Hivranek, and she had suggested changes. I think there actually is an opportunity to maybe make some of these changes, but if we're going to push it, we're going to push it. So, do you want to call the question?
Yeah. I'll go Rich and then Carl.
I just find it disingenuous by the county attorney that this is the second time she's looked at this local law, and now there's a new set of things that have to be amended to it. When, you know, why don't we get it part and parcel? You know, the law was introduced last year. She found it unconstitutional the way it was written, and now reserved her opinions for the for most of it, and it hadn't changed. And now she's got a
quite
whole
a bit of it's changed, Carl. I want to just point that out. And there's
well,
been
definitions, though. Definitions. The definitions part.
You got
three. It's very lengthy about how she feels about definitions.
The law has actually changed again, you know, because I spoke with Erica about it this afternoon. The law has changed again since she gave her opinion. So her opinion doesn't even reference the same drafted law.
Rich, you got.
No, I was basically going to say that. And I was going to say the same thing that Carl was going to say. I mean, this thing's been bantered around. And like Senator Rodriguez, I mean, I understand the he sent a letter of concern. But at the end of the day, I mean, the next resolution has a letter of concern from attorneys. So for any time an attorney sends a letter of concern, if we're going to vote against him, then that's fine. I mean, I'm not so sure he is correct in this instance. Being directed with the right.
Go ahead, Kenny.
My view on this, you know, and as I just keep thinking about it, and I've been, you know, thinking about it up front from the beginning, that I'm not sure that this is something that I think should be done on the local level. There's a lot of concern that I've had with this, that it benefits a challenger over an incumbent. And as it's currently drafted, it still benefits a challenger over an incumbent, because somebody who is a, you know, somebody who is a challenger, say. Now, this says a contractor can donate only, a person who has a county contract can only donate X number of dollars to a candidate or an incumbent. But a person who's challenging, say, for county executive, let's say, just for the sake of argument, that I was running against Mike for county executive, he might have a different, you know, group of contractors than I would have. You know, if I became county executive and if I wanted to hire different companies that don't have to, you know, that are exempt from competitive bidding. So the companies that are currently doing business with the county, if I'm a challenger, it's entirely possible that I'm looking to make changes. They can donate $5,000 to me, but the ones that the county executive has can only donate, what, $500? Is that?
Go ahead, Rich.
I thought there was a recommendation made that it was for challengers and incumbents.
Right, but I'm saying...
Just totally your argument is it would be make your argument baseless.
But it wouldn't, though, Rich, because what you're saying... Because, you know, you can't come in and say, you know, after I win... And if some person becomes a contractor, you can't say, well, you got to give the $5,000 back that you got 8 months ago.
There's 100.
So wait a minute. What are you? I want to be clear what he's saying because I'm a little confused.
Like a fishing
about
contest.
I want to be kind of clear.
A fishing contest?
You're reaching way out.
Yeah, because what you're saying is because you may hire new people.
Correct.
So, right now, we'll say, Hector's the contractor for X and Y that doesn't have to go to bid.
Correct. Let's.
And now, Carl, on the other hand, wants to do X and Y. So he's going to give you $5,000. Is that what you're saying?
Right.
But he could give Mike $5,000, too, couldn't he?
Well, yeah, but Mike's already hired Hector's XY.
The adamant idea of pay and play would be jumping out just like a sore thumb because all of a sudden he gets the job after you go in and you go, oh, well, he did give him $5,000 after all.
But I'm not saying that.
Always have an advantage.
No, but in this case, what I'm saying is the challenger has the possibility of an advantage.
Well, maybe they need one. Challenge.
I'm going to let John speak.
I'm listening to a lot of what ifs.
Mostly a disadvantage.
Like, what if I hadn't gone out last night? I wouldn't have gotten in trouble.
Life's all about
what if I invested in Dell Computer? I'd be sailing in the Caribbean right now.
Wouldn't be here.
There's a lot of what ifs. If we can't see that there's a problem that's perceived by the public, then say so. I mean, for instance, Jacob just released a new draft lobbying regulations that would, in a sense, make it an in-kind contribution to have your picture on the website for the county. And maybe it is an in-kind contribution. There's all sorts of things out there. I think we should have a hearing on this and see if the public thinks that some campaign finance, this in particular, is something that might clean up the perception of politics. We can what-if things forever. The other half is, and I know there's the ethics situation, the ethics laws. Who's the burden on? The burden of proof is on the candidate or the incumbent. It shouldn't always be on the contractor or the private citizen. Right now, if there's a gifting, there's a gifting clause. Nobody runs around following that. The candidate or the incumbent is supposed to know that if they take in over $75 worth of gratuities from somebody, that they are now violating the law. So I think that the county attorney has some problems. Well, I've heard two or three different resolutions that are on the table now. Or just were defeated, like for instance the charging stations. Well, I had three lawyers say it was against the law to do it. Doesn't matter to the legislators. They said no. There's another one up on the transgender law that a couple of the lawyers have said we don't need it or it's not proper. Well, I don't necessarily agree with that. I mean, so the county attorney at the last minute comes in and says, well, I got a lot of concerns. This is just what we got to put up with around here all the time. And I think we ought to have a public hearing on it and find out if the people really think that there's a problem in the world with campaign finance.
Go with Tracy, Hector, and then I'm going to call a question.
At the last meeting, I brought up a concern regarding the enforceability of the section about discouraging contributions. And I still have that concern. That said, I also
what
said
page
that,
is that on again?
That page is on 4C. And I brought it up, I spoke to Dave, but I said it to both John and Chris a caucus ago. But that said, John is the sponsor, and the last caucus I said I was supporting going to a public hearing, and if that's what John wants, because this has been laying around. I disagree with you, Ken, because I do I do want to see us regulate at the local level, and I think this has come a long way, because my major concern was that it justified to incumbents, and now that that's been fixed, my last kind of holdout is this for page 4C, which is section 4C. But if John wants to put it to, if John as a sponsor wants to have the public hearing, you know, maybe at having a public hearing we'd garner some more information that we'd
change. What was your problem again with 4C?
My problem with this is 4C says a county elected official or candidate shall discourage monetary or in-kind campaign contributions from any employee whose employment is or will be. And using the example of being a legislator or a candidate for the legislature, that's effectively every county employee because we approve the budget. And so I'm just saying...
Does that say that they're care, custody, and control? In other words, I don't think it's the union folks. I think
I'm not concerned about the unions at all.
Their appointments.
Yeah, I'm not concerned about that. The unions
so that's not every county employee, though.
Well, it's every county employee because we actually approve the budget, which has to do with every county employee. But so what I'm saying is discouraging to me, and what Vicky told us at the last caucus, which you weren't at, was Vicky said that your language originally said that the candidate shall not accept, which I have less problem with, but apparently you were told was not allowable. I don't know because
that
I wasn't
was,
a part of that legal.
That was
I actually agree with that, but I think somewhere along the way somebody said it's a difference without a distinction, which I disagree with.
Yeah, and so it's like, and that previous, what your original language was in this, I think makes more, you know, makes more sense. Whether it's not legally allowable or not, I don't know. Maybe we can't say that you're not allowed to accept money from employees. I don't know.
I'm just going to be just very brief because we had caucus on Thursday. Of the seven of us that were there, or eight of us, I forget how many were there, but we had as a caucus just decided to at least just to hold off on moving this forward until these tweaks have been made. And that's just what I'm basically asking of the sponsors right now with regards to definitions. And Chris, I know you basically felt that this was actually pretty easy to go and clean up.
Yeah, the definitional fixes that are in the county attorney's memo are relatively...
So can we fix them up after the public hearing?
But then you're going to have to re-notice a public hearing again.
Not if they're not in theory.
Would they be substantial?
If they're correct.
Right. Yeah,
right.
Because this was one of the things that came up, and then Tracy, then you brought up 4C. As being, I'm saying on top of when we actually had our caucus.
I mean, that one's nothing. That's not a major change if you put the alignment.
No, but it's in the totality of all the different things, whether it's the transfers or whether it's, you know, there's no, she has in here stuff like there's no definition of political or campaign committee. You know, there should be a definition of elections. You know, okay, fine, that part we won't, you know. 3E, the revised proposed local law uses the definition of business entity. I'm saying there's like a laundry list of things in here.
Basically, what she wants to do is have one that looks like the regulation pet sellers. We gotta get it out to like 38 pages.
All right,
34. I've been around for a year.
Can I make a motion to postpone this?
Second it.
I'll put.
I'm a no.
Call the question on the postponement. All in favor?
Hold on, wait. You know. Richard brought up something earlier that, you know, when I'm in the room, I have to vote. I'd be glad to leave the room and just let the committee vote.
I don't care. Vote.
Honestly, I don't really care either way.
Don't leave the room. Vote. I don't care.
Okay. Can I clarify that? Postpone and allow the sponsor to make the changes as per the county attorney's.
I mean, the sponsor, I don't know if he consents to the changes yet. That's, you know, so I'd hate to postpone it just for that, and then
I really don't want to. You know, if you don't believe there's a problem with campaign finances, we've beaten around for almost 2 years, vote it down. I mean, this is something that, you know, when you read some of the comments in here or some of the restrictions, these campaign laws are very amorphous, and they evolve in time. You have to start somewhere. Look at McCain-Feingold. It was there for years and was eventually thrown out. I don't think we're going to have too many 501(c)s coming down for county legislators. I don't think we have to worry about that. is pretty straightforward. If you're doing business with the county, you should be making contributions. If you work for me when I was in there, none of those folks should be allowed to make contributions to me or help me.
Kenny, you want to finish up?
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, I think you were talking about 527s, I think.
Whatever.
Yeah, they're the independent expenditure groups. We'll call them the Swift Boat Groups.
Well, it is accurate.
Yes. But, you know, my concern, and again, I may be on a completely different side of this than you are, John. I have a concern when you keep making more and more campaign finance laws, whether it be on the state level, the federal level, or the local level, you're inviting it to be essentially the political class to be just wealthy people who don't need to solicit contributions in order to run for office.
That's funny. He said exactly the same thing, word for word. Exactly. I swear to God. Word for word.
Oh, well.
Since we didn't vote,
I guess, is that, you know, let me, you know, just to you, Rich, is that an accusation?
No,
because
but it's exactly what he said.
I'm withdrawing my motion since we haven't voted on it.
Okay. All in favor of 391 going to the floor?
Well, I didn't even say elitist class, so if Mike said elitist class, then it wasn't word for word there, Rich.
390.
No, he's doing it on the main thing.
Okay, we got the
even if I was yes form,
with
I don't
John Penn.
So,
we're gonna go with 291 all in favor. Aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Public hearing it is.
And the required changes that can be done without.
No, he withdrew his referral. Apparently, because I talked with Mike or something. I don't know.
No.
It wasn't a
quorum referral. The quorum is the quorum. When someone else makes a motion and someone seconds it, and that's it.
I agree.
The discussion is over, and the discussion wasn't over.
No.
So okay,
no. No, it's only discussions over when you call a question. When
okay. Well,
we had to vote on the motion.
You're looking
for a star out there.
I'm going to call 391, setting a public hearing on proposed local law number 14, pet sellers law.
By the way, before you do the pet sellers law, the people are here for the cyberbullying, and I would probably say it would be nice to let them
get them.
That's good. Not at all. I'm here all night.
424.
What number is that?
424. Thank you, Legislator Donaldson. We're going to jump ahead to 424, setting a public hearing on proposed local law number 17, prohibiting cyberbullying in Ulster County.
I'll move it.
I'll second.
Thank you. Go ahead.
So, you know, so my caucus had some issues with regards to education. I second it. With regards to just, I want to get this thing moving, so I second it. With regards to education, with regards to cyberbullying in general, but also those who are going to be, who may be convicted under this provision. And in addition, there were concerns about diversion programs, not just to prevent people from, you know, from these kids, the hypothetical 16-year-old going to 1 year in jail. But in addition, that then ends up on their record, whether there was a way to sort of create a pathway for that to kind of come off their record. So I'm hopeful that maybe we have some new information about that.
I wouldn't say it's new.
Or, I'm sorry.
Were you looking for us?
I am.
Mr. Chairman,
I was kind of trying to intro a way to have that discussion.
Excuse me, can you identify yourself?
Yeah,
you
speak.
My name is Bob Fisher. I'm one of the assistant county attorneys. I handle all the juvenile delinquency and PIMS cases, persons in need of supervision cases in Ulster County Family Court, along with Kristen Gamir, who is also assistant county attorney and does the prosecution of the PIMS and juvenile delinquency cases. And this is Dr. Robert Beyer, who is the psychologist from Good Falls, Dr. Beyer? From Highland, who had been consulting with us with regards to the cyberbullying statute. With regards to your question, I don't know that there's no information, but I think I could give you some explanation that would be helpful for your committee regarding 16-year-olds. The way that the statute that you have is set up, a first-time offender would be constituted as an unclassified misdemeanor, punishable under Article 65 of the penal law, which is probation. So that person, the first-time offender, would not, at 16 years old, would not be looking at a year in jail.
Actually, I thought the maximum under that provision is a year in jail, no?
No. Not
under 65?
It's probation. So we're not talking about putting a 16-year-old first-time offender in jail for a year, if that answer helps.
Okay.
In fact, if I could just jump in, Mr. Chairman. I don't believe that under this law any first-time offender would be facing up to a year in jail. Is that correct?
Absolutely correct.
Thank you.
Unless they violate probation.
They're not a first-time offender.
But if they violate, but if they violate probation for some other offense, now all of a sudden they're
not a first offense, right?
Well, no, I understand that, but I'm saying, but it's not. But you know what I'm saying. But they're not bullied. They're not cyberbullying. Operated a vehicle without a license or something, you know, whatever the case may be. Is that still a violation at that point? I don't know.
Mr. Gucci could probably answer.
No. I'm not a criminal attorney, as you can well see. So go ahead.
You could violate the terms of your probation. Probation is a contract.
You know, but that's
not to go to jail. So you could violate the terms of your probation by doing something other than committing a crime. So you could potentially go to jail under a violation of probation.
And how long is that probation for, by the way? Do we have a sense?
I believe the probation is for 1 year under this.
Okay.
Under this statute.
Okay.
Isn't that correct?
It is one.
Because it's an unclassified misdemeanor.
So the probation
would be.
So the probation is 1 year.
Yes, that's correct.
Okay.
Chris, I'm gonna let Rich go unless you got something to add legally.
No, let's just go.
I was just gonna add briefly what counsel said, and I agree with everything that Mr. Fisher said with respect to the probationary sentence. However, if you enter a plea or of guilt to this crime, and between the time you enter the plea and the time you're sentenced, you do something else. You violate what's called Parker warnings or other types of warnings, that are admonishments that a judge gives you. You can also be sentenced to additional things, including jail, if the judge thinks that that's appropriate. Also, I've seen cases where sometimes probation doesn't want to have a particular person on probation. And the probation department also has a say in, obviously the probation department can't tell a judge what to do, but if a person violates probation, again, you could be sentenced to jail as well for violating the probationary sentence.
Richard and Dave.
Okay, thanks. The question, thanks for coming.
No, thank you.
My concerns are, there was a press release on this probably 8 months ago, a year ago.
Sure.
We hear nothing on it, and then 3 days ago, we get an email with the local law. So I'm not saying that's your fault, but when this law was initially announced, I got a call and a couple emails from some school board members who were very, very concerned about, you know, going forward with this. And have they been involved in writing this law?
The school board has not been involved in writing the law, but one of the things that we did, because you know what, you're familiar with DASA?
Sure, I took the class.
So one of the things that we wanted to do was... Okay. Sorry. Was this necessary? Is there a hole in DASA that we need to fill? That's actually why we reached out to Dr. Byer. Dr. Byer was the DASA coordinator for Highland School District. And he actually was able to identify significant holes in what led us to tell him this really was a necessary addition to what the school already has in place. I can also answer if you want to know the time frame. I'll give you a little background.
I'm just concerned I'm going to be getting phone calls, we're getting emails from people saying, why are you having a public hearing? You haven't heard about this for months.
Can I give you a little background on how this all came about? So Crispin and I attended a statewide conference of all the juvenile prosecutors in New York State. And when we were there, this was last November, the Albany statute, which had been struck down in a case called Marquand, but then was rewritten to comply with the Court of Appeals recommendation, was discussed widely. And so we have noticed over the years of doing the work that we did that there are many parents who are calling us and contacting us, law enforcement people who are calling us, contacting us. We're saying, look, I've got this kid. The kid is crying, wants to hurt himself, isn't going to school. They're the victim of this type of behavior. You need to help us. And our hands are tied because there's this hole that exists between 20th century law and 21st century technology. So we sat down and we started to try to, we brought it to B, and B said, yeah, that makes sense. Let me take it up the ladder. And there was that press conference which said that they wanted to go forward with something. And at that point in time, or sometime after that, the chairman expressed interest in it. We then went to work with Nick and Erica and Holly. Mr. Conrad was involved in every step of this. And I did speak with his secretary today. He wasn't able to make it tonight, but he was involved in writing the law, every step of it along the way. And we wanted to craft a law that would withstand appellate challenge, that would be helpful to victims, at the same time being
understanding kids make mistakes, and there's teachable moments
that's
with kids that don't
exactly
always need
it
to follow law enforcement. Because I know Rondell's got two sheriffs in the school.
Yeah.
They've got, you know, you've got teachable moments without getting, because predominantly the kids in school are under 16. You know, 90% of school children
are
under 16.
Sure, you absolutely can. And one of the things that we, you know, we're looking at and we're experiencing was that a lot of the children, we also handle the PINS cases.
Mm-hmm.
So we're getting these PINS cases where kids are missing these big quantities of school, and we're going to court, and we're, you know, in some cases we're actually having those kids placed outside the home because they're refusing to go to school, which is not good for, we don't like doing that. It's less than we want to do. But we're finding that there was this constant variable that was coming up, the cyberbullying behavior. So we're looking at this. We're trying to be sensitive to the perpetrator and educate the perpetrator, as well as trying
protect
to meet the needs of these victims and the families of the victims, too. So Kristen has some, I think, some excellent firsthand.
Well, I just want to address your point with the school board. We did go part of a gap in time. We went to the youth court, we went to the community
Well, that's different. That's a lot different than school boards, though. School boards are in with the kids.
Brings up, right, at the Mental Health Association, Mr. Shaughnessy was there.
Mr. Shaughnessy was at the Mental Health Association. I'll tell you, we spoke to LGBT, we spoke to the youth board, we spoke to
human rights. And the reason I'm is that we also were going to the school board, and
it was scheduled, but they canceled
us. Oh, really?
They had their schedule got filled up with other.
They rescheduled us,
so
we were going to go there.
Well, we're going there. Yeah.
Well, shouldn't this wait till after you meet with them in case they make recommendations, or I don't know. To me,
There's a couple things I think you have to consider with regards to DASA. I don't think I got into this before, but there's a fair, obviously a lot of this stuff is taking place outside of the school day. It's not taking place in school.
Right, I get it.
But there's another component, which is that a lot of this, because of the nature of the cell phone, is taking place across school lines.
Wow.
So we have a Rondell kid that's bullying an Onteora kid, and we have an Onteora kid that's involved with a Saugerties kid or groups of kids. So DASA isn't the perfect fit for this. There are holes that we do need to fill.
Okay, thank you.
Dave?
As I said in the last meeting, we had to bring this up, this type of bullying is devastating. I mean, it's worse than physical bullying in that you don't escape. You can't get away from them and go home, and, you know, it's there, no matter where you go. So I understand and I empathize with this law and what needs to be done. My concern lies in what was brought up by others, and actually I brought it up as soon as I saw it, and I believe some members of the Human Rights commission did, they may not have said it to you, but they talked to me about it. It's specifically, I think, Mr. Clegg, and I'm not sure who else, but I mean, it might have been my brother. But anyway, they talked about the, there were certain concerns with what council pointed out about the idea, and which I brought up in the last meeting, is that, you know, once you're 16, you know, the record has to be, because a lot of these people that are doing the bullying probably may have been bullied themselves, and that's how they start using, they start cyberbullying because they were bullied, and that's, you know, the concern that I have is the record part of it. And I really think we need to have, instead of going right into a certain misdemeanor, I mean, for over 16, even though, you know, and, you know, up through 19 years old, I mean, they should be, it should automatically be some type of an education program of some sort, rather than going right to a misdemeanor. Or, in the law, as I pointed out before, in the law you put in there that the first offense up through your 19 years old, that unclassified misdemeanor, if they, once they satisfy whatever, the educational program or the probation, whichever they do, that it's expunged, it's gone. And I understand we do have youthful offender with some, I understand that. But as I pointed out, a youthful offender, I might have stole a piece of candy here and I used my youthful offender, and now all of a sudden, you know, and a lot of, like I said, many of these kids that are doing the cyberbullying have been victims themselves, because I've seen that firsthand as an educator, where, in other words, they walk in even with the, you know, she did this to me and all this, and, you know, and she actually did. She wrote something on there, but then Denise stepped it up, and he made it much worse. But the point was, he felt he was being bullied, so he's bullying back. And, or the other end of it, you know, from, and I also saw from the other side, you know, where the girl was bullying the guy, and it went, you know, went back and forth, but it was, they were both. The problem is, you got a savvy parent, and I know how some are, and all of a sudden the savvy parent goes after the one kid that did the second kind, was retaliating bully, and they go after him, and that person becomes, all of a sudden, the criminal, when in fact they were doing it because, and as you we were pointing out, they're, you know, they're, that frontal lobe isn't quite developed when those, and they do a lot of, and then there's other ones, of course, that do the leading. In other words, like, Carl starts up and he's my buddy, and I say, we'll do this, and then we do that, and I'm not even really thinking about it all that much, you know, like, I'm just doing it because he's my friend. I'm not really thinking about the consequences, because, you know, as I sometimes say, you know, I'm young and dumb, you know.
I waited.
These penalties, though,
is there some way of doing that?
Go ahead.
And then you got.
Oh, I thought he stopped.
I know.
Oh, yeah, but there's a line.
I got a whole list in front of you.
I had to get my breath.
All right. But I mean, these are laws that are already on the books. I mean, these penalties are already on the books on the state level. I mean, we're not making up the. Unclassified misdemeanor.
Probation.
And then
probation is something Article 65 of the law defines what probation is, and that's already in place, and it's under New York State law. What we're changing is the definition of what the act is to get yourself placed on probation. I do want to say, to add to something Mr. Rigucci said before, he was talking about winding up in jail and violating probation, and you brought it up, Mr. Donaldson, it's important that the whole room is aware of this, is that there is something called youthful offender status. So those people that are over 15 years old, the 16, 17-year-olds, those people, the first time they go to court, if they've never been in trouble before and they do this, they're not going to have a record. It's youthful offender status for a first offense is mandatory. It is mandatory for a first offense.
Right.
So,
but there's not much. You know, what's the difference between 18 and 17?
Well, I do think it's important that everybody knows that there is mandatory youthful offender status.
Yeah, no, I didn't know that. I didn't know that.
Tracy, you want to speak?
Yes, thank you. So I had some of the same concerns that Dave is articulating, just in terms of the penalty section. And I'm curious, first of all, if is it a legal statute that required you to make the separation of under 16 gets this first penalty and over 16?
Yes. Under 16 are juvenile delinquents, and their cases are handled in family court.
As an absolute, that, so yes. There's that automatic distinction. Yes. Okay. So,
Trace, can I bring up one thing just to that point real quick? It's going to add on to what you were saying. One thing, and I didn't even realize this until the last committee meeting, juveniles cannot be, and again, don't tell any children this, juveniles can't be charged with a violation. Like, so, give an example, unlawful possession of marijuana as a violation can't be charged to a juvenile. So that's why, you know, that's why the unclassified misdemeanor is...
Right.
The last committee took a vow of silence that they would tell no children in Ulster County.
You can't ask us to go and make that after you've already told us.
That's my fault.
It's too late. To echo some of what Dave said, and I don't know if it's something that can be put into the law proper, but I see the law and the chance of Ulster County adopting our own law as an opportunity to have that, whoever used the term, teachable moment, to if we can put it into the law that you're required to have some kind of counseling, or you're not just that you go on probation, or that you get the violation or adjudicated through the court. I don't know if it's something you can do. Subsequent to last week's caucus and raising the concerns, I started to research and I read that the case that you referenced, the Albany case.
Mm-hmm. Marquand.
And I'm curious, I don't know if anyone knows, but since Albany's rewritten the law, have there been any challenges?
There have not been any challenges.
Because what was interesting in the Marquand, the judge's, final, whatever it's called, his hearing on it, his final word, is he spoke to...
It was a her.
Okay, thank you. She spoke to the three, the sexual points,
mm-hmm.
and the rest being falling under freedom of speech, and which is not something a week ago that I was thinking about, but I'm curious if the two are in this law, if A and E might end up being challenged on freedom of speech grounds.
Would they be challenged first? Would they
withstand?
There's always a possibility, but we actually spent a lot of time looking at that case and other cases, and so did Nick and Erica, and we really feel like we narrowed it as much as possible for the challenges.
Can I say this? In the world that we work in, law, there are no guarantees. There are no absolutes. But we do feel that it is a very durable piece of legislation that we're confident would withstand any challenge.
Okay, Hector, why don't you add something?
Thank you.
I'll call the question.
So, actually, a couple of things. First off, actually, in Section 4C, we may want to actually amend that, as opposed to where it says previously violated, it should probably say previous conviction, because if not, that could actually potentially open a can of worms. Council Ragucci, do you concur with that?
I would concur, only because if we're going to establish that a predicate would result in steeper punishment, we should probably clarify it's not violated, it would either be a conviction or a plea.
Completely understand what you're saying.
I think Mr. Ronkes, you are the sponsor. Do you consent?
There you go.
All right. So it should read then has and has previous conviction. Because you can't say previously convicted.
Any previously convicted, 15 or convicted, older, previously convicted of Section 3 of
the
local law.
So there's that. But the point that was.
Yeah, you'd have to make the same change in B or no.
Oh, yeah, you might have to make the same big change in B.
In B?
Yeah.
Hold on, you might. Hold on.
And has not previously been convicted of.
The word violated also is in B.
Yep.
The offending term appears in B.
Any person who knowingly violates who...
Who knowingly violates Section 3 of this local law and has not been previously convicted of.
Just for consistency, because you're going to change C.
No.
Doesn't it mean the same thing?
I feel like it kind of does, but...
It does, but
I'm not
you
gonna,
could... Yeah,
like
you,
I said, I'm not going to mince hairs. If that's going to make somebody feel better, I'm happy.
So this gets back to, though, the issue of, quote-unquote, a guarantee, right? You know, is a child under 16 gonna get sentenced, right? To over 16, over 16 or 16 to 19, right? You know, they might even like on a first offense, are they gonna get? I'll say 16, 18. I apologize. You know, are they gonna go and get convicted and sent to a year in jail under the provisions of this law? On their first offense, are you guaranteeing me? Absolutely, right? And it's only under a second offense, right?
An unclassified misdemeanor.
Probation.
Under a second?
1 year probation.
No, for on their first offense. And so on the second offense, it could be a year in jail, right?
Right.
Potentially, yeah.
And you're right. For first offense, it's up to a year probation unless you do something else.
Which, I mean, at that point, I mean, I really...
If you violate the probation, then...
Sure.
Before we get too far out of bounds here, I want to call a question on the amendment.
Well, it hasn't been made in second. It's second.
I made it.
Motion, second.
All in favor of the amendment?
Aye.
Hector, continue.
No.
You're done?
I'm done right now. It's...
Anything further to add before I call a question on this, sending this to public hearing?
Chris?
Yep.
On the situation with the, again, I go back to this 16 to 18. I mean, they can use youthful offender, but they may have already used it. And let's face the age group, they do a lot of things that probably shouldn't be doing. And I still worry about the idea of having a record of some sort, and if they did it a second time, I'm less concerned with it, because once they learned something, they had some kind of a education program or something like that. But my other concern is, in other words, you're treating them, people that are 16 to 18, even though they already had their youthful offender for stealing the Butterfinger, like I just finished doing, stealing a few out of the other room. They're treated the same way that the 45-year-old guy that's basically cyberbullying some kid. Right?
Right.
That's my concern, is that I don't know how you could separate that out for the age group, 16 to 18 or 16. I mean,
I think if you conceptually think about bullying, and we had this discussion on the previous committee, the historical bully is somebody who's physical and violent, and so if I punch you in the nose two times, the first time I use my YO status, the second time when I break your nose, I wind up going to jail for a year.
No, that's not what, yeah, but let's face reality. When you're talking about these people like this, you use the YO for the stealing the Butterfinger, not that it might have been something else. I'm over-exaggerating. I'm sure they stole something else, but... that's used up. I mean, it's different than using up the cyberbullying for punching you in the nose and then punching you again.
But that's not cyberbullying.
But I mean, if I punch you in the nose and then I used up my YO and then I did it again, well, you know what? I should have got the education the first time. And no different with cyberbullying. In other words, the first time you do that, some type of a better break for a younger... And I'm not talking about somebody when they're getting up 40, this one works. I'm just concerned that it doesn't work. I mean, I taught high school for 28 years, and I know the kids, and I know the age group, and, some of them are 16, are extremely bright, in other words, very morally grounded and ethically grounded. Others don't get there until they're 19 or 20, and it's just a matter of their growth rate. We all do things at No, after that, then you're getting more fully developed. Well, you know by science that it's not developed until what, 21 or so, 20s?
So under existing law, I think in the early 20s, the frontal lobe fully develops. But under existing law, a 17-year-old who punches you on the nose the first time, because he's bullying you. Maybe he gets charged with assault. He uses his YO status. The second time he punches you in the nose, he goes to jail. That's under existing law.
Right.
Why are we assuming that somehow, and I think you're falling into this trap, in all fairness, that the cyberbullying is less offensive and less harmful than the punch in the nose? I think it can be far more harmful. It can have far more devastating
effects. Yeah, but most of them are not. If you punch me in the nose, you don't say me.
A punch in the nose is clear cut.
It is clear cut.
I think, Mr. Perry, our statute, when you read it, we define what type of punch. In most cases, that is not done. Nobody does it even with that. When they punch in the nose, it's usually a fight, and most get thrown out of school.
Not always. No. Let me tell you.
Oh, I know.
I've prosecuted many a juvenile delinquency assault case of a child that did not fight back, that took a beating and then some. I had one kid from high school with a fractured orbital socket, was kicked in the head 5 times on the ground, never tried to defend himself. Those things happen.
But they're both getting suspended from school.
Sadly, they are, aren't
because
they?
Because the school district doesn't want investigations.
Yes.
I've dealt with that with kids. But there's nothing wrong, and they're suspended. The school doesn't want to
We are great proponents of the diversion program, of the 180 program. We believe in them. We send tons of kids to them. It's interesting. I've seen a change in our caseload, the types of cases that we handle. It used to be shoplifting and graffiti and petty larceny, right? Now we're handling, on a regular basis, serious rape cases. We have one right now. Shootings. Weapons on school property, one in Ontiora recently, a knife that if you saw it would scare the living daylights out of you, and it was a threat from very close proximity that I have this knife and I'm going to use it. So our caseload is changing. We deal with those things. We understand those things. But there's this whole void that's out there, and we have law enforcement, we have families coming to us, parents, mothers and fathers, my child was the victim of this behavior. What can you do to help me? And that's why we're here.
Tracy?
So, two things. To get back to, can we put in the law something requiring some kind of counseling? Can that be in the law?
To answer your question directly, the problem is we need to fund that. We need to guarantee that.
Aim in the law? You're throwing a kid in jail without rehabilitation.
We're not throwing kids in jail. Counseling, let's make that clear.
I can answer that question. Counseling cannot be imposed. You cannot say, you can make a probationary sentence, and one of the conditions of your probation could be you have to do this or, right? One of the things that the way the statute's written, and especially through the Section 1 with the 15 and below,
right,
is that they will go through diversion. That part of diversion is the counseling process. Mm-hmm. It's part and parcel of that's what diversion is.
But for 16 and over, it's not.
It's probation.
It's probation.
The only reason I'm saying it the way I did is because we have a specific. We can make part of your probation go to counseling. But who knows what they're going to do with that kind of thing. If you're thinking of a specific learn about cyberbullying program, I do not believe you have one in place at the moment.
That's a concern, and therein comes full circle to my concern, because again, you have school systems that I don't know what to talk about, but you have the school systems that are operating under these regulations, right, that in all the different school systems have it. Now, I don't know how many cases you deal with in your school, but you have all the different school systems, they're all doing this. You have a first-time offender in school, A, B, C, D, each one, this is happening. Now, some of them are going to be dealt with in the school, some of them, the parents or the school itself, on a first-time offender is going to call and invoke this law that's now on books. I mean, is it going to be a matter of course that in every school, every time there's a first offense, it's going to run through the legal system as well? No. So when you say it's not, then it brings it to me, well, okay, it's a tool, but if it's a tool that's being used kind of sometimes yes, sometimes no, how is that fair for a first-time offender?
If it does get an appearance, I'm sorry, because deferring to you and now I'm deferring to you.
I'm sorry.
But if they do get a juvenile appearance ticket, no matter what school district, they go to the probation department and they do an intake there. And then what likely happens is there is a very good program that they almost always use, which is the community program, which I was talking about earlier, which is where you go in front of a board of community members. You have to tell them what you did. Then you come up with a contract that you sign with them, where you have to leave, you have to usually write a letter of apology to your victim, to your family. You have to figure out what it is you did to hurt people, not only the victim, but yourself and the people around you. Then you go back and tell the same community members what you've done.
But that's for under 16. No, that's for the under 16.
So the only person who would come to us under the statute as it exists now is somebody who's refused that, who isn't following the diversion.
Right. What I'm saying here, and Dr. Barr can probably speak to this, here you have, say, in one school district, someone who is 16, so they're not eligible for this status you're talking about. One school decides to deal with it on its own. Another school says, we're going to deal with it on our own through the programs in place, but the parent calls the police. Another school says, I'm just referring this right to the police on a first-time offense. I see the possibility for a kind of imbalance depending on how it's approached, which is why, and to me, this is all very new. I mean, I'm just starting to read about it because, like other members, I read the executive's press release back then. I had very extreme concerns about the penalties in that legislation.
Which I hope you address.
Yes. Okay. This is not fully everything here, but it's markedly better. But it's still, I'm just not sure when we have these two different possibilities, again, since we're talking about, in this case, we're talking about first-time offenders, too. Like, are these first-time offenders who are three-time offenders at a school? You know what I'm saying? Like, or are they people who are three-time offenders at a school and another school, the first offender gets sent right to the police because someone decides to, control of the I just am not sure.
I don't think there's a way to answer that to your satisfaction because that's exactly what we deal with right now with assault in schools. It depends on the school. It depends on the school resource officer, whether or not they decide to keep it in-house, whether they send it to us. It depends on the parents of the victim. It depends on whether the victim discloses. There are so many variables that we really can't control. I don't think we can control. I don't think we can write a piece of legislation that deals with all those what ifs.
Kenny, and then Dave.
Just to your point, Tracy, about some schools treating it differently and whatnot. My view on this, because there already have there are already mechanisms in the school to deal with these things when they happen on school grounds or during school hours.
Affecting performance
in school,
yes.
But again, if the actual bullying isn't happening, there's really not recourse, I don't think.
What do you mean if the actual bullying isn't happening?
I'm saying if someone goes home on their computer and cyber bullies somebody,
My understanding is there is recourse. If I'm being bullied and someone's doing it from home and I'm going to school and I can't concentrate and I'm an emotional wreck,
September, yes. So from September to June, that's true. Not in the summertime. That takes that out, and it takes out the cross school district or the multiple school district scenario. The kid from Onteora that's doing it to the child from Rondout, that's not a bad case. How?
Why, if the kid child from Rondout is emotionally distraught, what does it matter where it's coming from?
But the school's not going to take care of it. How does the school take care of it?
It becomes harder to coordinate it. I mean, if it goes cross district, then it happens. My kids with me and the perps with you. I call your DASA person and say, my kid's over here crying their eyes out, and they're showing me the text. So I've got it all. Mm-hmm. So I alert the other district to say, the complaint's here, go do what you need to do. all the districts have the same DASA mandate, so part of your question is who would access this and how quickly might they? That's hard to do, because what I did in the thing that I gave you guys is I wrote...
I just got it.
There's numbers in there. I gave you the last 3 years worth of DASA stuff out, a district inside. And I'll just pick a number. In 15-16, there were 50 DASA complaints written. When we investigated them all, there were, in the end, 11 that measured up to a reasonable standard of bullying. There's a lot of he said, she said stuff to sell people's feelings. But when the schools do what they do, that they're mandated to, I have to bring the kid in. If the kid hasn't come to me, I hear it in the cafeteria, I hear it from their friends. It all gets reported. Then you go through the investigation piece. In that, you're talking to the kid. It has to be reported home to the parents. So you've informed outside the kid's bubble. Those people all come in and they get their say. They get their view of it. Most of them resolve. The ones that really don't are where you have, I hate to say it, but a real bullying situation is what's underneath it. I've got a committed perpetrator who's into making sure that this person feels bad, or literally everybody in this room, because it's what cyber gets them the opportunity to do. They can multi-victim as opposed to just pick on one. So a lot of it, with what's already going on in all your districts, is handled in-house and is resolved. The ones that aren't are the ones that we know really have moved up to the next. They're much more committed and intent on what they're up to. And all that stuff we've done, talking to them, talking to the victims, and their parents and teachers, and so you have those kind of full-blown meetings with the kids present. You then put counseling in for both the victim and the perpetrator, and then maybe even disciplinary consequences depending on what's been in it. All that stuff having been done, the bully kid is the kid who goes through all that stuff, and at the end of that still is producing the same behavior. Now, can I stop a parent on the very first time from wanting to call the police? No, because they call for anything that happens.
Like your example with a physical bully or an assault in school.
Okay, thank you very much, Dave.
So basically, the first time that they are actually, if you're over 16, they would get first time they would get probation, right, and a record.
No, not necessarily a record.
Not necessarily
only a record. Only a record if they had already exhausted their youthful offender status.
Yes. So
and after that, youthful offender status isn't gone. It's discretionary, isn't that correct?
Discretionary after that to the judge.
Correct.
So and court by court. The judge will decide what they think is appropriate.
Mm-hmm. Worried about the record. That's what I'm worried about.
Kenny, you want to talk about the record?
The first offense, they got a record. Was, you know, the abuser, or well, even if they're 19, they got a record done because they don't get youthful offender. If they're 18, they don't get youthful offender. It's over the time frame.
But again, Legislator Donaldson, as we brought up in the last committee meeting that we were when we were talking about this, the judge still has the discretion for an ACD. You know, the judge has the discretion to, to vacate the sentence after they've completed their probation. You know, we have to at some point trust the people. You know, as was said, I think I'm repeating what Bob said. You have to trust the people that you're putting in these judges' positions. We can't tailor a law that answers every particular scenario that could possibly occur with these. And one thing that I really, I feel strongly, I'm not going to tell my whole story from the last committee because I don't think I can again, but, these aren't cases where somebody is just calling somebody else a name. Some examples of cyberbullying are, getting, having naked pictures of a young woman or young man and posting them on the internet or sending them to the whole school, creating a fake Facebook profile, which I learned earlier this evening is called catfishing, and
You're welcome.
Thank you. and doing or saying a bunch of things in somebody else's name that's not them. I mean, these are really. Again, you're looking at really bad behavior in order to qualify for this law in the first place. And then, I asked, as Erica was working, and Nick were both working with the county attorney's office, on sort of a redraft. My concern is, we're not looking for a law that is designed to be punitive. We're looking for a law that's going to redesign behavior. And that's why, nobody on their first offense is facing jail time. They're all facing probation, and especially with the kids, below 16 years old in family court, they're adjudicated in the best interest of the child. And in that case, the best interest of the child includes not only the victim, but the perpetrator. The 14 or 15 year old who is, who is doing this, who might not understand the consequences of what they're doing. But we're in an age right now where we've got children committing suicide because of what other children say about them on the internet. And I feel like, the reason it was drafted by these two individuals is because they're the ones facing it on a daily basis and have no recourse to give the victims and no way to change behavior. One of the things, when they're taken in probation, and this came up in the last committee meeting as well, so I'm probably repeating for some people who were in that committee meeting, when they're taken in the intake, they look at other aspects of their lives. Is there a problem at home that might be causing it? Are there other problems? Is there a way that social services can help intervene? Are there services that are needed for these children? So again, it's also a way to find out is there an underlying cause that can be remedied, through services.
We feel that the cyberbully law that we created, and I said this in our prior committee, doesn't have tiger's teeth, and it doesn't even have puppy teeth. I don't think you'll find, Chris has been doing this a long time, both sides right of the fence. Chris was a special prosecutor on a lot of cases in courts where I saw him. He's a criminal defense attorney. I don't think you'll find a softer piece of law legislation than this. And we feel that the victims deserve protection. And this is sort of the bottom line of protection that we can give them.
Dave, you want to finish up?
Yeah, I guess I'll finish up. It's only public hearing. I mean, I know the, these things, they may start in school. Sometimes they start out of school. They go into school. They come out of school. It's a difficult thing. I have no problem with the A part of the penalty. I think that works. They're going to be going into juvenile court, so I kind of have all the faith that that's my only problem is with the second one where, the probation record. I'd like to see something maybe in there saying that they, even putting it in there that, for people that are, under 20, the judge should consider an ACD if they fit the criteria that the judge wishes. A judge that may not, maybe more of a hang 'em high type of judge would at least see that the penalty is saying that they want you to consider that first. Somebody under 21 or something like that. After that, I'm not. When you're getting older than that and you're doing stuff like that, you need to know better. But even though people don't. I see it on Facebook all the time, as I was saying before. My concern, of course, is the, I have a problem with the criminal justice system in general. We have a, the idea is that our system is the punish. And we have, how many people do we have in prison?
It's not a punitive law.
It's not as punitive, maybe. All right. I said it.
It's really a remedial piece of work.
Okay.
All in favor of 424 as amended?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
Aye. Aye. Goes to the public hearing.
391, setting a public hearing.
Thank you.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Thank you, bud.
Great discussion.
Thank you, Kristen.
Can I just ask you a quick scheduling question?
Yes.
Setting a public hearing on proposed local law number 14.
Oh, we have questions.
Head sellers.
He's walking out the door.
Don't let him go.
But he's walking out the door, so I guess we're all short now on it.
Go ahead. You're all ready.
All of them. I make a motion.
Yeah, I made a motion.
I understand that people... I'll move it
to begin discussion.
Is there a second?
I'll second.
Thank you. Now, can I... You know, this law...
Like everything, it just comes at the last minute. I thought when we were all pretty unanimous that if we were going to pass this law, that a county employee or a police agency was going to be the enforcement or the investigative arm of it. And I just don't like where we give the commissioner the ability to hire or appoint an authority to go and do the inspections. And to be honest with you, the authority will most likely be the SPCA. And I'm not opposed to the SPCA. I go to the fundraisers, I support what they do. But there's been two animal cruelty cases in the last couple years that were both thrown out of court because of lack of work on the SPCA's part. They lost the cases. Both times the owner of the dog won the cases. The dog won the cases. And it was because of poor, whether it be investigative things. And I don't think we should have third-party people going to people's homes and businesses to do county law work. And that's just one of my concerns. I got 100 others. But.
Hector.
All right. I don't have 100 concerns, but I just do have... Just to further clarify, Mr. Chair, since you are the sponsor of this,
indeed,
and I brought this up to your attention on Friday, but you know, and I apologize for not texting you the screenshot, but it's section 7B, and then
section 7C, right?
Yeah, I think it's now become B. I think, right? I know. Oh, it's section 7(2). Sorry, my apologies.
Quite all right.
And the other one was in. And while I realize that you don't view it as maybe being incongruent, there was at least a question about that. I'm trying to remember where this other section is. Under... What was that, Trace?
The other one, the section 4.2, which was deleted.
Well, I know, but I'm just starting off though. It's in terms of the authority, you know, okay, section in terms of people doing the inspections. For some reason, I think there was also another... Why do I think it was in section 14? But I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. Minimum care. Record sale.
Section 8.1 is inspection, but that's with the commissioner.
Yeah, but that's the one that you got actual county right. Officers involved in the process, correct?
Correct.
Mine says section 8. The commissioner may enter with a duly incorporated animal welfare organization.
Yeah.
8.2 and 7.2.
No, but there was an entire section and I'm missing it.
Page 32.
Is it page 32? Thank you. And it's in section 4. It is in section 14, right?
Commissioner.
The health department. The commissioner of the Department of Health.
And what was the, Jay, what was the...
I have no idea what you're talking about. I just found section 14.
Oh, okay. I thought she had found it.
Nope.
All right, because there is a section here that she's
section 14
specifically
is residential breeders minimum standards of care.
No, I got that part, but there is a section here that actually addresses specifically having county officers doing the inspections.
Last part, great section.
I see what you're saying.
Oh, there we go.
I see what you were saying, Hector. We were
so they and thank you. Inspections of residential breeders shall be made whenever I knew it was section 14. I couldn't remember this stupid thing. In the discretion of the commissioner and or her authorized agents, or a complaint warrants such an investigation. Any person conducting an inspection of a residential breeder or responding to a complaint concerning a residential breeder shall be either a county official, police officer, peace officer. So the peace officer component can be met by the SPCA's enforcement person is a peace officer or no?
I believe that the SPCA has humane law enforcement officers, which under New York state law are peace officers.
And they're trained
as peace officer status. And they're trained in the proper care of animals.
Okay, but you know, but it, was this enough to address at least the concerns of those breeders, I guess, that have
been
showing up to these meetings?
Honestly, no, hold on. Okay. Thank you. In fact, to Tracy's point, which I think is in section 7 and 8, which is the inspection of pet sellers which do not qualify as residential breeders, which means that they do not raise or breed the animals on their residential premises. Mm-hmm. I understood that the concern was that if someone's going to inspect somebody's home, that they would want it to be either a police officer, a peace officer, or a county employee, where there was where essentially, not a lay person who could possibly come in.
You added the words "or a residential breeder's facility," so you open the residential breeder's facility to not-for-profit animal welfare organizations, which was, I have a lot of these breeders in my district, and they called me, and in fact, I ran into one before this came back up. I didn't know it was up. She said, there have been a lot of meetings, and we think we're getting somewhere. The biggest sticking point was the
inspection. Yep.
And she said, I think they've conceded to it being a county person. And then I read this, and I was like, this is...
Well, we've conceded... I conceded to being a county person, a peace officer, or a police officer, because... I understand. So just let me get to what I was saying, and then we can move on to, making this however the committee wants it to read, honestly. In working with the breeders, we went back and forth a number of times. There were a number of drafts back and forth. There may have been something that was missed, so I'm happy to talk about it and fix it before it goes to public hearing. But the concern about hiring a county employee, and this is what I shared with Mr. Delaney and his wife, who were the main points of contact in dealing with the hobby breeders and residential breeders in the county, which are very organized together. The concern about having a county employee is that we can't just hire somebody for 12 hours for this, and it's not going to take an enormous amount of time to do these inspections, especially since residential breeders are almost all going to be exempt from this, unless they get up past 15 dogs or cats per year. Mm-hmm. So the concern, I understand the concern of wanting an official to, somebody who has sworn an oath, which all police officers and peace officers have, to be able to be the one to go into the home. And that was why we had come to the agreement on county official, police officer, or peace officer. Mm-hmm. And if,
In section 8,
my concern is the county's going to automatically delegate it right to the contract agency that they're going to deal with. They're not going to want to. The sheriff's going to say he's too busy. The state police are going to say they're too busy.
Quite frankly, they're not trained.
Too busy. They're going to refer it out to the
people who are trained. The people who have
call it police officers.
The SPCA has police officers who are trained to do this.
Why have they lost their last two court cases? Police? And that is all public record. Why have they lost them both? The one up in Olive, or both may have been in Olive. Read the newspaper, Google, go to the courts, Google them. They were thrown out, the SPCA's cases against both of the folks and the dogs, because the SPCA did not investigate it properly. And that is a fact. So why? We're going to have an agency that's going to go investigate that have lost their only two cases in the last 5 years. Why would we?
They were the only two cases that were prosecuted?
That have gone to court, that have been in the newspaper to frame it. That have gone to court. Probably yes, because usually they're on the front page of the paper when you see, animal dog abuse or anything. It usually makes it to the paper. In Olive.
Well, I would like to add,
where the defendants won both times.
The people that were the breeders in the last time that showed up, I'd like to see them.
I believe everybody received a copy, everybody on the committee, and I know Tracy didn't, but...
It's that last thing you touched.
Thank you. Mr. Delaney and his wife were sorry they couldn't make it tonight. They came to the law enforcement committee, and they're away, I believe, at a dog show in Las Vegas, for this couple of weeks. But they sent everybody an email urging passage. But that having been said, I've been through this before. I've been going through this for 6 months with them back and forth trying to make it right. I've got no problem waiting another month.
It's got to be a county agency or a law enforcement officer.
The question is how much. Yeah, when expertise already exists, how much money are we going to be spending?
We shouldn't be passing laws if we can't enforce them ourselves. We shouldn't be, in my opinion, we shouldn't be passing laws.
So we should hire a humane law enforcement officer with salary and benefits that are going to be $110,000-$120,000.
No, well, you know what?
We can't send your money to
a training class to become certified in this. I can't imagine it's these guys. They do it every day. It's just another class. They go to school all the time.
Jennifer wants to add something.
I just wanted to say, according to an article in Freeman, four law enforcement officers graduated from canine training schools sponsored by the sheriff's office.
That's to be a canine officer, not to conduct investigations.
What, if they have that kind of background, why can't it simply be a matter of at least extending their purview in some way with some additional training, and then it can be enforced? I mean, they already have a certain degree of knowledge.
Why don't we talk to... I, like I said, I'm fine with putting this off for another month. We can talk to the sheriff, but I feel like we've been down this road before and there was a reason why we didn't go that way, but...
I think that's a good idea. In other words, let the breeders come in or whoever that may be.
Yep.
And if they're sort of very comfortable with it.
And if everybody who has, can I read this to you?
The headlines in the Kingston Freeman: Olive Judge deeply troubled by Ulster County SPCA's conduct in animal cruelty case.
Do you know if they're specifically talking about the humane law enforcement officers or other members of the SPCA? I know you don't.
They're representative of the organization. And that all I'm saying is that's my concern when you've got somebody going in businesses and maybe houses. I'm just concerned. If we're passing the law, I think we need to make sure that people doing the investigation or doing the investigative work need to be held at a high authority. It can't pass the buck and say, we're too busy to do stuff, we're going to have them go do it. And that's an agency that's not employed by the county, that... Who knows if the person got in an argument with the guy raising dogs 2 years ago, or there's personality conflicts. You're bringing somebody involved that shouldn't be brought involved, in my opinion.
I've got an honest question for you though. What? If the town of Shawangunk Police Department botched a couple of cases, should we disband the Shawangunk Police Department?
They're handling hundreds and hundreds a year. These guys are handling.
You don't know how many they're handling. Due respect, you don't know. Yeah, bring them in.
They've gone to court.
I'm fine.
All right. I believe we're going to postpone this. Although for edification, I think the third one down is Delacio convicted in Olive on 21 charges of abusing dogs, and that's June 24th, 2014. The one Rich you read was from March 25th, 2014. So it seems like there's a lot of all around different stuff. No. I'm saying it's probably up and down and sideways. But we've agreed at this point to postpone this. So let's focus on that.
Sorry.
I just want to bring up what I think is a slightly different point, because I don't, most of what I heard were from the people who spoke at public hearing and then people who called me out of concern at home. And some of what was articulated to me, which I'm sure you've heard as well.
How'd that?
More than I have, because you're on the front lines of this, is not strictly about the qualifications of the organization. And that's why I think we're kind of getting off track, getting into a weeds about is the SPCA qualified or not. The concern is that when this says animal welfare organizations, some animal welfare organizations, and not to name names, are by their nature and their definition of their charter opposed to breeding as an absolute. It's an activist organization, and I'm not speaking about my personal opinions on it, but I'm saying the opinions of the breeders were, we don't feel comfortable with delegating the responsibility to someone who is from the get-go opposed to what we're doing.
Understand.
So that's, to me, a different argument than are they qualified to do it or to know. And I think there's a lot of good in this legislation. I am concerned about the disconnect with particularly 8.2, just so you can look at it offline, just because it does basically say that it can go to an outside.
And it might, and it might, and it might be something that didn't get that didn't get fixed in the process between Mr. Delaney and myself.
And it may be that can be solved by taking it away from the residential breeders and treating the pet sellers differently, you know, and allowing I have no idea, because I never heard any complaints about from pet sellers about organizations like the SPCA regulating. I heard it from the home residential breeders.
Yep.
But I just have to say, this is the first time I'm seeing the red line, because what was put in the packet only had a couple red lines, and I didn't.
But you actually have it now, though, right?
Now I have it, and I didn't see it. I didn't know it was coming, so I didn't even get to reach out to people. And I mean, I'm open to whatever everybody wants to do if the breeders want to come back. I mean, I think what we really might end up having to do is make whatever fixes and have another public hearing and see what comes back at the public hearing. I mean, that's what brings out the
quite frankly, I mean, I pretty much over the last, I would say that Mr. Delaney and I started meeting in June. I mean, it could be something like that. It kept getting pushed back because it was the sales tax, and then other things kept coming forward that, I don't want to say were more important, but were time-consuming and caused me to get off track with wanting to bring this back up. You know, Mr. Delaney and I, after a couple of cool-off months, you know, because we had some hot exchanges back last year, he and I came to the table and said, let's try to make this something that works for everybody. You know, the definition of compromise that I use is when everyone walks away from the table a little unhappy. And we've been working on it for months and months. Like I said, I've got absolutely no problem, you know, bringing them in. Maybe we make a couple of minor adjustments that make everybody feel more comfortable. The comment from Mr. Delaney to myself is that they didn't want somebody without the proper training and proper certifications and an oath of office coming into their home, which I totally respect. And that was why we had agreed to the police officer, peace officer, or county employee, because all three of those, classes.
Can I just interrupt and ask, did they know that a member of an animal welfare organization could just swear the oath to be a peace officer, and that would count on a par?
That's not accurate. I mean, you don't just swear an oath to be a peace officer and all of a sudden they let you carry a gun. There's specific requirements under the law. A peace officer is essentially a police officer, but not for a police for a police department.
But I'm saying he didn't separate the concern about the animal welfare organization. It was about a sworn oath.
I think that they're I think that they're concerned about an animal welfare organization being somebody who is a volunteer for the SPCA and doesn't have specific training and doesn't have the proper requirements. So I think that when we agreed on this language, it was because there are concerns about a layperson coming from an animal welfare organization were allayed.
So they were worried about Brian Shapiro showing up.
That's not what I was going to say. I had a different person in mind, but I kept looking at the recorder and thinking I better not say it. So
we have
Brian Shapiro. I can say it.
We're looking for a second to postpone.
I thought I moved it to postpone.
I need a second.
I'll second.
But can I ask, just on the record really quickly, anybody with specific changes that they'd like to see, please email me, and I'm happy to look at them, talk about them, discuss them, debate them.
Well, you know one of them.
I will.
Yeah,
you know
the animal welfare.
I agree. Yeah. That's my concern is the idea that, somebody walking into your home.
No, I mean, I totally understand. I can tell you this, that one option that I had come up with, sort of got, lost in the shuffle was we could create a position
for a part-time, you know, part-time investigator. But what we would do is we would go and we would probably hire part-time one of the peace officers that works for the SPCA, because there's a limited universe of these people in Ulster County.
Or we could put $5,000 in sheriff's budget for overtime, and one of those folks would spend one day a week doing it, or one day a month doing it. You know?
I guess we'd have to look at what kind of training would be required, and whether or not the sheriff could spare somebody to go through all the training.
I mean, we just approved 2 new sheriff deputies.
Yeah, but they have to be, there's specific training that goes along with being a peace officer. It's not just like, you know, poof, you're a peace officer.
All in favor of moving this back a month or so?
Aye.
Anyone's in for you on this? Or?
You're going to be calling in the, you know, just make sure you bring the breeders.
I'm going to call Mr. Delaney after this meeting.
And tell Mr. Delaney you'd like to have him and a couple other representatives.
Yeah,
like
that's the last meeting we had. He brought two.
So moved on.
As long as if I feel that they're comfortable, and we address what each.
I'm sure that not all of them are going to be comfortable with everything, but I'm sure that there's a consensus.
I got to see what
okay.
Okay,
let's move on to 4/11 and 4/12. I believe Hector has picked a date of December 15th to have a special.
That's. I'm pretty sure. I don't think I selected any date, but okay.
Yeah, me and Jay did some extensive research. We have budget hearings coming.
Well, I ran under the bus with you.
I'm sure that there must be some other date that must be closer to now.
We got Thanksgiving coming up.
Kevin, we should have Thanksgiving together. How about that? I'm
you like quite all right. You haven't had to use
that's
at all.
No, I really don't. Like the December 15th? No, if you're asking me, no.
You want to push it back to January?
December 15th is a Thursday. But, perfect. You know, beyond that, you're going to tell me that there is no date within November for us to go and because I realize that Wednesdays aren't good for you. I got that. I'm not trying to go and, you know. However, if, Mr. Chair, if you're so inclined, as you also well remember when we actually had the meeting on the transgender law, you know, we were able to accomplish many of the goals. So, I mean, I don't know if that's somehow...
Can I ask you a question?
Yes, sir.
Why is that law still in front of us if you accomplished your goals?
Do you really want to get to that one, Mr. Chairman?
I don't think so.
Yeah, I didn't think so either.
I'm just saying.
Anyway, so that said, there has to be a date before December 15th.
All right, we'll go back to the drawing board tomorrow.
You know, well, I'm not trying to be on his side or anything, but he does have a point. It's kind of tough getting him in November with the
budget hearings.
The budget hearings and all that stuff that is, you know, a little rough. But, I mean, I get to understand where he's coming from.
And while I can, and you know that I strive to be reasonable as best I can, David, but that said, I said strive. And
okay.
Like now, did I? I chose my words carefully. Anyway, that said, we don't have any, Jay, we don't have any other date.
I went over the calendar with Vicky.
Okay. The calendar's very tight.
So now Vicky's under the bus, too.
Yeah.
You know, these buses, by the way, can only take so much to
email us the dates.
I mean, we've got hybrid cutaways.
We're looking at December 15th,
which is you get only some way that the tires get so bloody and then you can't go anywhere.
Like
you have some
tacos,
no, but I mean, well, I get, well, I understand that, Jay. Why don't you get back to us with other alternative dates? I'm willing, of course, to postpone. I'm not wasn't looking to go and push this for tonight. Clearly, for 4/11 and 4/12, I'll even move that at this point to postpone. But
second.
We have to get a date before December 15th.
Well, but if we're postponing it, it's not going to be coming up until the November time anyway. Then you're going to have to put in a time on that.
Well, I can postpone 1 month
the next time we meet is when? When's our next meeting?
November 11th.
Would be November, is it 21st?
The November 21st.
Okay.
That'll be the next Wednesday.
So then, and then the meeting after that would then be December 19th. So I don't mind postponing till December 19th. I think I'm legally allowed to do that, correct? Postpone for 2 months?
You can postpone right? to a date.
To a date certain, right? I'm also the sponsor of it. So. But that said, in between now and then, we should have had, and not just the 15th, sometimes before then, but we should have actually had this meeting. I hate it when we do that. Oh, yeah, let's meet on the 15th, and oh, by the way, then we're going to vote on the 19th. You know, that doesn't make a lot of sense either.
I'm trying to work with you, Hector.
And indeed, Mr. Chair, I'm working with you by postponing until December 19th.
Is that what you're most well, we can,
it is, indeed.
We can go, yeah, but we still meet on the 11th to discuss this.
No, to postpone this, not so it doesn't come up in November, it'll come up in December, but that we will have met before then
yes.
to basically go and discuss
can
this. Hypothetically, maybe even met twice before then. She's going to get dates to us with regards to when this is going to happen.
I'm
guessing.
So I just want to add something to that request.
Go ahead.
At the withdrawal on the floor, I discussed the fact that we, in our workshop this past summer, agreed that there was specific enforcement language that if it were acceptable to the Republican caucus, that you would be willing to support the law. So I'm asking between now and then that we find an agreement on our enforcement language. Since that was the offer, and I accepted it.
Ms. Chairman, if I could just real quick, because it's going to be, really easy. I think at the last meeting, Legislative Council, Nick here, has, I felt it was made clear, but if not, I'll say it again. I think that our comment on it is that the way to make the enforcement section, legal is to delete the enforcement section in its entirety and say that complaints will be referred to the state Human Rights Commission because that's the authority that our Human Rights Commission has under New York State Home Rule Law.
So,
but aren't we trying to address that in this?
Well, to Legislator Berkey, do you want us to also postpone 448 in the same time frame or no?
Have we done anything with the 11th
floor? I'm asking to work alongside with the
Human Rights Commission. Okay. So, if I may, Mr. Chair, considering that I am the one who made the motion, and actually, I guess the germane point, if you want to go, and because apparently we've gone off the mark, the germane point would be to go and also include in my motion, Mr. Chair, to include Resolution 448 to also be postponed to the December 19th meeting, and also have it discussed alongside the overarching human rights law whenever we set that date.
I'll second that.
All in favor of postponing all three?
Aye.
Thank you.
Is that better?
Oh, it's the legislative holiday party.
Thanks for asking. 425, condemning violence and hate speech and expressing solidarity with Muslims and all those targeted for their ethnicity, race, and religion.
I move it.
I'll second.
425.
It's 425. It's like there's like 13 so very, things in the middle. So
at the very end, more or less.
Mr. Chairman, did we move and second this?
Yeah, let's move and second it. Yes.
Okay. I just feel this resolution in some of the whereases, and I understand that the whereases don't really mean anything when it's put up to a resolve. But the whereases, I think, really alienate people more than trying to bring people together because there are many more groups that deserve the same solidarity and the same treatment, and to highlight just one group and then to also almost imply that another group is the reason why you have this memorializing resolution, I think is out of line.
Hector and Dave.
Thank you. Well, Mr. Beltiglio, I disagree, but since we're here, what are the whereases that you find offensive?
Can I?
Whereas, I just read this today.
It's just too many memorializing resolutions.
Right? It's just. Mr. Delphigio, which ones do you find?
Jennifer, you bring up one or two every month, memorializing ones, and they're admirable, but it's not what my job is. I want to deal with budgets and laws. And I
don't think I'm the only one.
What?
I don't think I'm the only one.
Brings them up. You
want to
go back and look and see.
Well, where is that law enforcement is actually perpetuating this? Or was that a different draft, Hector?
What's that, sir?
Where you mentioned law enforcement as actually perpetuating this?
Which whereas, sir?
I don't know. I'm looking for it. I only read it today. Unless I read a previous version of it.
Arab and where 5. Sorry, whereas number 5. Arab and Muslim Americans and those perceived as Muslims are frequently the targets of abusive and discriminatory police practices sanctioned by the state, including surveillance of their neighborhood and places of worship.
Okay.
Can we get examples of that?
In Ulster County?
Yeah.
Okay. What else? What else, Mr. Bethleglio?
I got one.
All right. Second whereas, actually.
All right. Second whereas, okay.
Particularly concerned to see political figures and elected government officials leading this escalation and using it in order to gain power.
How about whereas?
Escalation and gain. Sorry, which one is this one?
The second whereas.
It's an HBO documentary about it.
The Hutchim, even before its founding, Muslims were brought to the Americas where the...
Just
the
summary.
Huh?
Yeah, political figures and elected officials.
They're patsies. Is that on the record?
Actually, it is. You've actually just got to set that on the record. Right.
Well, so says the documentary.
You know...
Third one,
that was nice
to touch
there.
Expressing that you want us to have a better understanding of solidarity passed. Among Muslims, not among Jews or Catholics, or Protestants, Methodists, Episcopalians, but one form of group, and then all those targeted with their ethnicity, race, or religion, and then to say, put insightful whereases that the police across the country are actually part of the problem, and that elected officials are part of the problem. I mean, it's not making me feel like that we're all together on this helping.
Okay. So right now you've identified the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, fifth whereas, and the second resolved, right? Because when you said the second one, the second whereas does not say what you just said. It's the second resolved. So. No, the second whereas says, whereas the history of Islam, was enslaved and brought to the Americas, where they later helped in numerous ways to build this country. He started talking about the second resolve, which is the one that says categorically rejects political tactics.
No, he's talking about
the heading. I was actually just reading.
Oh, you're reading the heading?
Resolution.
Can I make a motion to postpone?
Okay.
But I just,
second.
We're not going to come to an agreement on this tonight.
I don't think it's fair to other ethnic groups by just labeling them as other
targets.
Oh, I have a lot to say. I have a lot to say now on the subject.
Question.
Thank you.
No, if someone actually has their hand up to go and talk, Rich.
Two-thirds.
Okay, let's take a two-thirds vote to go call the question then.
I'm one.
All in favor of calling the question.
I don't even know who I am. Do we want to let Legislator Rodriguez say something that he has to say?
I thought it was emotional.
Oh, Dave votes yes.
No.
He's looking to go and talk.
I wanted to speak.
It didn't get us.
No, but it's apparently since that's what we're doing now. Motion to postpone.
So that's on the table.
Yes.
All right.
It's two-thirds. Four is two-thirds.
Everybody who serves on this committee is here. I increase the number for quorum. I increase the number for two-thirds.
So
I think it's Tracy's
two-thirds
point.
Of six? Four. I passed basic math. So four people call the question. There's no debate. Call the question. All in favor?
All in favor of postponing.
No, you're taking a vote to call the question.
Yeah,
initially.
1, 2, 3, 4.
That's two-thirds. And
you go. I want you to go vote on it.
We did.
No. Hey, call it out.
You
sorry.
Call the question. I mean, you
All in favor of postponing?
Now, Mr. Chair, you have a vote. You have a motion on the floor to go and call the question.
Aye.
Are we calling? Aye. Wait a minute. Aye. Are we calling the question or are we postponing it? What are we doing here?
Same thing. Calling the question is calling the vote to postpone.
No, no, no. But then you need four votes to go and call the question, right?
Yes, we got that. But I want.
No. I want it on the record. So it was. So then, Madam Clerk, I guess those voting to go to call the question to end all debate was Mr. Roberts, Mr. Belfiglio, Mr. Parody, and Mr. Ronk. Is that correct? Just make sure it's on the record. Okay.
Oh, no, I would like.
This is ironic.
So
we also have
now we have to vote. Now we can't. Now we can't talk
on the floor, and now we can't debate the committee. I love it.
Well, that's what you just did.
That's right.
Okay. You want to end speech? That's fine. If call the vote
until next month. That's not ended.
Take the vote on postponement.
I want to talk about it, but okay.
So then all those in favor of postponement were Roberts, Belfiglio, and Parody and Ronk. Is that correct? Is by the same vote?
Sounds right.
All right. I'm a no on postponement.
I'm a no.
Okay.
Can you mention my name again on the postponement?
I said Roberts Ronk.
I just want to make that clear.
Yeah, that's all. Hey,
All right. 428, approving the execution of a contract, amending, causing aggregate contract amount to be in excess of $50,000.
Move it.
I'll second.
Score another one for the Belfiglio amendment.
I've stopped patting myself on the back.
I'm trying to pat you on the back for you.
But there was a good.
Don't worry about it. Carl does not miss an opportunity for self-promotion. It's okay.
There was a good couple of contract amendments that really helped, like the $300,000 information throughout the contract. The $3 million. Anyway.
All right, I make a motion to adjourn.
Well, can I get a
vote?
Yeah.
Second.
All in favor?
I just made a motion. He made a motion to adjourn. I seconded. Technically, right. that actually takes precedence.
That's actually true. It's not debatable.
I know.
Had a motion on the table already.
I do vaguely recollect wrong.
All in favor to adjourn?
Aye.
Aye. We got to vote on this.
You just adjourned.
I'll move it.